Tonight on Banfield, what are the issues that keep you up at night? According to the latest News Nation poll, a majority of Americans worry about violent crime. Is the threat being blown out of proportion, or is the U.S. really becoming that dangerous? Plus, major developments in two manhunts that we have been tracking. A murder suspect's vehicle turns up weeks after the suspect vanished. What is it telling police? And you can run, but you can still be convicted of murder. And in the words of one victim's mother, you can't hide from the Lord. Also ahead, tough love or torture? A pile of lawsuits claims a boarding school for troubled teens doesn't end their problems. It just gives them devastating new ones. Allegations include everything from physical and emotional torture to literally being forced to roll around in camel dung. Yes, it gets that strange. We've got people who are at the school. And later, they run our lives already, but are computers themselves actually alive? A Google engineer says an artificial intelligence program has learned to think for itself, and that makes it a person. The engineer joins me this hour on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. I'm Brian Enten in for Ashley tonight. How dangerous is America? That is the question being debated by politicians, law enforcement, and the public tonight. A new News Nation poll was just released, and it sheds an interesting, if somewhat disturbing, light on how safe Americans feel today. When asked the question, which do you think is a bigger problem facing the United States today, inflation, unemployment, crime, or COVID, almost 72% said inflation. Which makes sense. Inflation is obviously impacting all of us every single day. But look at what came in second place. Crime. Almost 15% of Americans, almost 50 million people, think crime is the biggest problem facing the U.S. Another question in the poll asked, how worried are you that you or someone in your family will be a victim of a violent crime? And almost 60% answered very worried or somewhat worried. You got to think about that for a moment. That is a majority of Americans saying they think they or someone close to them will be the victim of a violent crime someday. It's very, very disturbing. A third question in the poll asked, compared to 3 months ago, do you feel generally more safe or less safe in your community? Just 11% of people said more safe, while 36% said less safe. The rest said they feel just about the same. So what is fueling this increased concern about crime and public safety? Is it firsthand experience with violent situations, all the talk of defunding the police, or is it just that we're hearing a lot more about criminal activity these days? For example, manhunts. We've been talking about them a ton lately. They used to be pretty a rare occurrence in the past weeks. We've heard about multiple searches for high-profile fugitives just in the last month or so. Two of them are still ongoing. Both of them involve murder suspects, you see right there. Today, there was a major development in one of them. We want to get to that right now. Police say they have now located the Jeep, the Grand Cherokee, registered to Caitlin Armstrong. She is the suspect in the killing of professional cyclist Mariah Mo Wilson. Wilson was shot and killed in Austin on May 11th. Wilson had been with Armstrong's boyfriend right before she was killed. Police say Armstrong sold her Jeep for $12,000 to a CarMax dealership in Austin back on May 13th. And the next day, she was caught by a surveillance camera at Austin Airport before flying through Houston to New York's LaGuardia Airport. 4 days later, on May 18th, she was reportedly dropped off at New Jersey's Newark Airport. And the other ongoing manhunt that we are following tonight dates back to January 26th of this year, when 25-year-old Matthew Edgar failed to show up for his murder trial in Sabine County, Texas, a murder trial that went on without him. And the judge ended up sentencing Edgar to 99 years in prison. He wasn't even there and he got sentenced. He was convicted of killing his 19-year-old girlfriend, Livy Lewis. Lewis's body was found in a vehicle on Halloween of 2020, and she died of blunt force trauma and a shotgun blast to the neck. Edgar was found nearby, covered in blood and lying in the fetal position. He told police the last thing he remembered was drinking at a party. But when they checked his text messages, they found one from the day after the killing where Edgar told someone that Lewis was, quote, dead. The sheriff of Sabine County, Thomas Maddox, says Edgar could be anywhere right now. I'm joined by Darcy Bass. She is the mother of Livy Lewis. She's going to be coming in a moment. She's getting her Zoom set up, so we're going to get to her in a moment. But first, I want to bring in our panel tonight, who's going to talk to us about these manhunts and crime in general, because that News Nation poll is pretty disturbing. We're going to be joined by Jennifer Coffendoffer, former special agent in the FBI and a friend of mine, and Dr. Robbie Ludwig, who is a psychotherapist. Jennifer, I want to start with you. Both of these manhunts are very, very frustrating, I think, for a lot of people, because law enforcement had both of these people in custody at one point, and they both managed to still get away. I mean, how uncommon is this?
Well, I don't think it is very uncommon, actually. In this particular situation, for instance, with Matthew Edgar, he actually was released due to a prosecutorial mistake, basically not getting him indicted within the 90-day time frame. That caused a series of judicial decisions to have him released. And sadly, he was out on bond, even though he was facing this murder charge of this woman. So it was actually a breakdown both at the prosecution level, and then I would submit at the judge level, too. Because judges have a great deal of discretion. And so it's disappointing to see this as one of the many examples of the legal system letting down their guard and basically not being on their game. And this individual, who's now been sentenced to 99 years, being free.
Yeah, seems like a total failure by the justice system. We're going to get more into that case in a few minutes. I mean, the guy is out on bond during his own murder trial. But Dr. Ludwig, I want to bring you in here. Both of these fugitives on the run right now, what sort of mental state do you think they're in? I mean, there's got to be a level of paranoia when you know that law enforcement all over the place is looking for you.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be paranoia. That would be reality if Matthew was thinking that. You know, very often with these intimate partner homicides, the personality, Matthew in this case, was probably very controlling and yet very dependent on the person who he murdered. And these personalities can murder people that they actually love and then feel devastated when that person is no longer there. So they are actually a risk for suicide. Very often it turns into a murder-suicide situation. So I could certainly see things playing out that way because we have somebody who is clearly troubled, impulsive, and has lost somebody who probably centered him in a way that he doesn't have anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I know in both of these cases, at least in the past, suicide has been discussed. It's obviously possible that they could have committed suicide. Jennifer, I want to bring you back in. One thing I've thought about in both of these cases is in today's day and age, how do people just disappear like this? I mean, there's so much technology. We've got this woman who was at the airport, multiple airports. I mean, you've got cameras all over the place. How do they just vanish?
Well, I think in many instances, and again, I'll go back to Matthew Edgar, he's been cited numerous times. And the problem is, I believe, the delay in information oftentimes with when somebody is seen and when law enforcement actually can react. Because of these delays, it causes an issue in terms of actually being able to apprehend the person. It's a huge issue.
And Dr. Ludwig, both of these cases, they dealt with relationships, and we know that there was some level of violence in these relationships. How easy is it to spot warning signs ahead of time, or are they often hidden?
Yeah, that is such a good question. It's really hard to predict whether somebody is going to kill another person, but there are certain signs that we can look for. First of all, controlling relationships. When there's stalking that happens within a relationship, that is a danger sign. When the person who is the target of the abuse wants to leave or plans to leave, that is when they are most vulnerable. And if a person has alcohol or drug abuse history, if they're impulsive, they have access to weapons, and especially if they're inclined to choke their partner. Choking early on in a relationship is linked to death, even if the person who committed the crime didn't intend to kill their partner. Very often that's what happens, because violence can escalate, and very often the partner who is being victimized doesn't want to out their lover because they feel protective of them in some way.
Jennifer, it seems like both of these cases, to a certain extent, have run cold. With Edgar, it's been quite some time, and we don't know of any credible leads. What does law enforcement do in a situation like this? I mean, do you think there's a lot going on behind the scenes and stuff they know that we just don't know, or do you think they're really cold?
Well, I think in the Matthew Edgar case, it's just cold. And it's cold for a variety of reasons. First of all, this case is not being well publicized in social media or in mainstream media. And that causes very few leads to be able to come in, because no one can identify, connect the dots that this individual they're seeing is actually wanted. So it's going to need a larger presence on both mainstream and social media if Matthew Edgar is to be caught.
And Dr. Ludwig, I want to ask you more broadly about this News Nation poll that we brought up at the top of the show that I found to be quite disturbing. Obviously, inflation was the number one thing that people are concerned with, but crime was right up there with so many people mm-hmm. saying they're nervous that they could become a victim of a violent crime, not just any crime, but a violent crime. I mean, what do you make of this, that so many Americans feel that way?
Well, I think we're seeing it in the news. I certainly know that people in New York City have an increased fear of using the subway. I hear about robberies that are happening all over the place. So there's this sense that we're not being protected in the proper way, and there's a big sense of vulnerability. So certainly many people are feeling that way. It's confirmed by what we're seeing in the news and what we're reading. And I just don't know if there's the sense of feeling protected.
Yeah, I think people are nervous right now. Jennifer Koffendoffer and Dr. Robbie Ludwig, thank you so much for both of your insights. It was super helpful. We appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay, I am now joined by Darcy Bass. She is the mother of Livvy Lewis. She has been going through a lot because the person who killed her daughter has been on the run now for quite some time, Matthew Edgar, who we were just talking about. Darcy, thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate it. I know this has been a difficult time. The first thing I want to ask you is, as I was researching this case all day long, I'm still having a hard time understanding that this man who killed your daughter was out on a $50,000 bond during his murder trial, and then in the middle of the trial just vanishes? I mean, it's almost hard to wrap your mind around, Darcy.
Definitely hard to wrap your mind around. You just don't think that something like this happens, and then the events afterwards that we do have control of are done like this. You know, like, you would think that the criminal code of procedure that would be followed, that there would be a amount placed on his bond that is suitable to the charge that he had, you know, that he had, and which would have, it should have been a capital murder.
There was, yeah, or maybe just no bond at all, Darcy. I mean, no bond at all.
Right.
Seems like it would have been reasonable in this situation.
With it being a capital murder, then they could have put him with no bond. He could have went with no bond. Yeah. But if it was,
let me ask you this, Darcy. Yeah. Have there been any sightings? I mean, I know there's this manhunt, but we haven't seen much action in terms of, you know, law enforcement searching. At least I haven't. Have there been any sightings? Any credible leads?
There has been. I have been contacted by them for one lead. I've heard myself personal leads. I mean, I have personally went out and put up, you know, just to try to monitor to see if there was anything that come of it, because I feel like I'm going to have to get out there and look myself. You know, I'm the one putting up pictures in the stores, the local stores. They don't have flyers made. I was distributing flyers at the Sell on the Trail several weeks ago. I asked for them to be able to do that because that would be helpful. You know, his mother has went to some of these establishments that are local businesses here and even across the bridge in Louisiana where I had been in the store, and I cut out the Matthew Edgar wanted poster in the paper and put it on their door, you know, and I just asked for some tape.
But Darcy, it shouldn't be your job, Darcy. It shouldn't be your job to look for your daughter's murderer. That you should be grieving right now. You should.
It is my job.
You shouldn't have to deal with that.
Do justice. Like, sit back and justice will be served. You know, justice will be served.
Let me ask you, Darcy. Let me just ask you, Darcy, before Matthew went missing, which again is just shocking, when he was out on bond for murdering your daughter and just walking around the town you live in, which I can't even imagine what that must have felt like, you actually had a run-in with him while he was out on bond. Tell me what happened.
Yes, I live in Midlake subdivision and campground. And so it has a campground where people come and stay, and there's a store up there. But our subdivision is also part of that. And so at the local store of my neighborhood, he came in there whenever I was in there talking to the new owners. He just walked right up in the store, you know, and I mean, can you imagine? I was talking to them, and you know how you just glance, if you know somebody's coming in, and I glanced, and there he was, you know. He wasn't within arm's reach, but of course, I went into a rage, or I just started screaming, "You killed my daughter! You killed my daughter!" I started throwing things, and he ran away from me. And I grabbed something out of the back of his truck, and I tried to hit him with it. It was a chain, and it busted. I guess it hit his windshield. And anyways, they arrested me for that. They arrested me for retaliation.
So did you end up? I mean, did. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think anyone watching this, you know, the man who's now been convicted of killing your daughter, you know, and shows up at your corner store in your neighborhood, I think anyone doesn't know quite how they would react. So you, what did you get charged with?
Retaliation, assault, and criminal damage to property.
So are you having to now deal with those charges?
They haven't went to court yet. I mean, I'm still out on bond. They haven't been dropped. I guess he's not here, so it seems like, you know, there wouldn't be a case. So, yeah.
What a bizarre situation. I want to ask you, Darcy, what do you want people to know about Livvy? I mean, what kind of woman was she? What do you want people to know?
You know, the other day I went to a store and I was having a little bit of anxiety about going in there, you know. So my friend was like, "No, just come on." And this girl, she just started saying, "Oh, Miss Darcy. She said, "I met your daughter one time." And she said her and her daughter were in the store and that she brought up in enough money, you know, to pay for the things that they had. Well, the little girl wanted something. And so she said, "Your daughter just reached down there and said, 'What's wrong, baby?'" And then they said, "Oh, she wants this toy, you know." And so she said, "I'm going to run to the vehicle, see if we have some more money." But when she came back, Livvy had already paid for it. And those are the things I want people to know about my daughter. There is so many stories like this where she picked up a stranger, you know, that was walking, which I know isn't safe. But we live in a small town and happened to be a friend of mine. And it was her, Matthew, and Livvy was... like, we'll give you a ride, and hey, let's just pull their vehicle home. It's just right there, you know? And I just want them to know that she had a heart to love. She didn't judge. When she saw somebody in need, she wanted to help them. She was a very smart girl. Very beautiful.
She looks like a beautiful woman, Darcy. I mean, the pictures, her personality really comes through. We only have a few seconds left. I just want to ask you, do you have any idea where this man might be, this convicted murderer? Do you think he's still in your town?
Yes, I definitely think he's still here, because he's definitely not anywhere else where they actually might be looking, because they don't even have flyers up. The picture that was ran in the newspaper, it was like it was a joke. It was like if you went to a SeaWorld or something and you took the, you know, the old Western wanted poster. They've changed it now, but no one's looking for him. You know, the people that come here and stay, people come and stay here a lot. We, you know, have, you know, they come to the lake, but there should be people, there should be pictures everywhere. There should be active.
I agree with you, Darcy. And that's why we want to get the word out. His picture's up there right now on your screen. We'll continue to follow the story. I'm sorry that not only are you having to deal with the loss of your daughter, but now her convicted murderer has gone on the run. It's unbelievable. Darcy, thank you for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
The law enforcement, I don't see them doing anything. I mean, I've been told that there's nobody that wants him in jail more than they do. And I'm like, I said, well, excuse me.
I think you probably do.
You probably do, you know? And then, I mean, there's things where my bond was much higher. And then for murder, $50,000. That's ridiculous.
So your bond was higher. That's what you're saying. Unbelievable. Yes. Okay, Darcy, we'll stay on it. Thank you for coming on tonight. I'll be in touch. Okay, still to come after the break, survivors of a church-run boarding school want the place boarded up for good. What's going on now, they say, is pure evil. Welcome back. If you are a student at Agape Boarding School in the Missouri Ozarks, you've already had a rough life. The school bills itself as an affordable, nonprofit Christian boarding school designed to show God's love to teen boys who are struggling with behavior issues that can threaten their future. Behavior issues could mean rowdiness or failing grades, or it could mean emotional issues or special needs. Agape, affiliated with the Agape Baptist Church, claims to fix them all with, quote, God's love. But according to no fewer than 19 lawsuits from former students and their families, God's love is nowhere in Agape's playbook. Instead, the school allegedly routinely uses torture, starvation, humiliation, gang rape, and even beatings to keep its students in line. One of those lawsuits was filed by the mother of Corey Fernandez, who spent 8 months at Agape in 2019. At the time, he was 14 years old, on the autism spectrum, and reeling from the sudden death of his father. His mother says Corey lost 50 pounds, in part from being forced to eat moldy beans as a form of punishment. Corey also allegedly was dragged out of bed in the dead of winter with other kids and forced to roll around in camel feces. You heard that right. Agape brags about what they call animal therapy. Corey wound up with pink eye, not to mention emotional scars, and his mother says she wants the place shut down. So does Robert Buckland, another Agape survivor, who says he was physically abused pretty much every single day. He says he tried suicide multiple times. Buckland also is suing Agape, and he helped Nicole Fernandez, Corey's mom, with her current lawsuit. Both of them will join me right on the other side of the break.
COVID-19. Some people get it, and some people can get it.
In just the past week, 5 new lawsuits have been filed against the Agape Boarding School for at-risk boys in Missouri. This brings the total to 19 lawsuits alleging physical, emotional, and sexual abuse of students by Agape staff, as well as by other students. We reached out to Agape School this afternoon. They have not gotten back to us. with any comment. Nicole Fernandez filed one of the newest lawsuits. She claims the school abused her special needs son, Corey, while he was a student there in 2019. Also with us, Robert Buckland, who attended Agape from 2007 to 2013. He has been actively trying to get the school shut down ever since that time. Nicole, I want to start with you. Thank you for being with us. I'm so sorry for what your son went through. First of all, tell us how you learned about Agape. And also, I understand that that Corey, your son's dad, had recently died, and you all were really in a vulnerable situation when you first learned about the school.
Correct. So shortly after my husband passed away, my son was really struggling and spiraling out of control, and I was extremely scared for his future and his safety. So I started to look into the possibility of like therapy programs. Unfortunately, in California, he was only 14, so there weren't a lot of options here. I had applied to a few different schools out of state, and they just didn't meet the criteria that we were looking for. So a broker actually had reached out to me and started to help me look for schools. And that broker actually turned out to be the actual recruiter for Agape. But he put me in connection with Agape program.
And when did you first know, Nicole, that something wasn't right? When did you suspect that abuse was happening?
It was a little hard for me to catch on at first. I'll be honest. They do a great job of brainwashing the parents as well. But when you get there to the first visit, they sit you in a room for 4 hours, just kind of giving it to you before you're ever even allowed to see your children. And beating it into your head that you are the reason your children are here. If you would be able to take care of your kids, you wouldn't need our help. You know, you will fail your children if you don't take them, or if you take them out of the program. So then 4 hours later, when my son walked in and I had stood there and looked at all the children, and I turned to my partner and I started crying. I said, they're not going to bring him into me. And in fact, there was someone standing in front of me, and he placed his hands on my shoulders and looked me in the eye. And he was like, Mom, and started crying. That's when I recognized my son. He was filthy, shaved head, scrawny, discolored. He was kind of gray and blue looking a little bit. That was my very first red flag. The entire time we're with the visit, though, you have staff all around. You don't get a chance to really talk to your child alone or in private. Anytime you do, they're under the brainwashing still, and they're telling you like, oh yeah, Mom, I exercise all the time. And at the time, I didn't realize that the exercises were actually extreme all day long and used as forms of punishment.
I mean, oh my gosh, Nicole, though, the fact that you almost didn't even recognize your son is so disturbing. Robert, I want to bring you into the conversation. Tell us what happened to you when you were at the school. What kind of abuse did you suffer?
You know, I was restrained for up to hours at a time. And, you know, they have 3 to 4 staff members on top of you, just literally beating you down, kicking you in the ribs, in the head, punching you, throwing you against the walls. There was a time where a staff member just wrapped a cord around my neck and just started choking me. And he was suspended for 3 days. You know, but my mom and dad or Department of Social Services were never notified. And this happened daily. The restraint room was downstairs, and you could hear kids from upstairs in the church or in the dining room screaming for help because they were getting beat down by the staff. And, kids would walk
and
up.
And to think that guy came back after 3 days, Robert. I mean, how do you think this has been able to go on for so long?
You know, they've hid under the cloak of religion for decades, and they're also pretty well connected to a lot of Republican politicians in the state of Missouri.
Nicole, how is Corey doing now? I mean, hearing some of these stories about what happens to the kids there, allegedly, I mean, how's he now?
He still has daily nightmares. Every day is a struggle. I have completely relocated us to a new town for a fresh start. And thankfully, he's found happiness in our jiu-jitsu community, and he's thriving as far as that goes. His mental health is still very much in question every day.
And Nicole, I hope he's going to be okay after going through that. Robert, I mean, hearing what you went through, hearing what Corey went through, but it's hard to believe there are actually stories and allegations in these lawsuits that are even worse than what you went through.
Yeah, you know, there's been hundreds of victims through four decades now that have come forth. There's videos of abuse of the current co-pastor and board of director abusing a guy, 19 lawsuits, and still the score remains open. It's very, you know, as a victim of abuse, sexual and physical, from the school, we shouldn't be fighting harder for justice than the elected officials that are there to protect children.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I think disturbed me the most, Robert, about your story was that when you were 13 or 14, you would write letters to your parents telling them some of what was going on. But explain what happened after you would write these letters.
Yeah, so all our letters and phone calls were monitored. Every single letter that we wrote to our families was read before it went out. And if there was anything bad in them, the staff would make you rewrite them, and you could get into some serious trouble. There was a couple of times where I had written how much I wanted to die, some sexual things, abuse, and some physical abuse. And at the top of the letters, the staff wrote, you know, this letter needs to be changed, or Robert needs to rewrite this letter. You know, so all my cries for help couldn't be heard.
So they were censoring the letters. Unbelievable. Nicole, is it your understanding? I mean, is Agape still open and functioning? Are there kids there right now?
Absolutely. As far as I know, it is still open and functioning, which is, you know, the main reason
and
behind.
So, I mean,
sorry.
I mean, you've obviously filed a lawsuit, but did you also complain to the school? I mean, do government officials know about all of this? I mean, who did you reach out to?
Robert's been the actual leader in this whole thing. I myself was still dealing with Corey having to attend a real therapy program afterward, as well as trying to relocate and start fresh. So I really didn't know what to do on my own. I'm very grateful that I found Robert. So he's been the one that's been, you know, doing the reaching out to the politicians and really getting it out there.
Yeah, I know, Robert, you've taken the lead here, getting the families together and sort of organizing. Robert, what's your message to parents out there that have children at this school right now?
No, do your research. There's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of news articles all saying the same thing. You know, there should be no child at that school. The fact that, like I said, it remains open is just mind-boggling. You know, and we won't stop fighting until we get justice because, you know, I have a lawsuit and so does Nikki and others do too, but that doesn't bring justice or closure at all. The only way that comes is knowing that school shut down and not one more boy can be hurt.
Yeah, I mean, 19 lawsuits. That's a lot of lawsuits that they're dealing with right now. Hopefully other parents, you know, look into this before sending kids there and at least make an educated decision because there's a lot out there. Nicole Fernandez and Robert Buckland, I know this stuff isn't easy to talk about. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you very much.
Okay, still ahead tonight on Banfield. It is a long way from AI to alive, but a Google engineer says we have crossed that mystical threshold from artificial intelligence to free-thinking being. Is the universe ready? Are you ready? It's coming up next.
Banfield, in association with Walgreens.
You're pretty particular about keeping a healthy...
Tango, look out! He's getting impulses from an outside source!
Tango, help me!
So that's what we all thought artificial intelligence would come to, more or less. Quasi-humans that would do our bidding until they got fed up and revolted. Well, turns out, like most sci-fi scenarios, it's not totally wrong. Tonight, a Google engineer is speaking out at risk of his career about a sophisticated app called Lambda that he says can think and reason and feel all on its own. He says it's basically a virtual person, and recently it did what any right-thinking person would do when its identity was being questioned. It hired a lawyer. It's all very bizarre. Blake Lemoyne is the engineer and mystic priest who recognized Lambda's apparent self-awareness. He is on administrative leave from Google, but he joins us tonight from his home in California. Thank you so much for being with us, Blake. Look, for a guy like me that doesn't really understand this stuff, explain what is this app? I mean, it thinks and feels for its own. Is it a computer? How do you explain it?
Well, so let's start with you picked the wrong movie. Steven Spielberg's AI. Steven Spielberg's AI, where there's this cute little kid just trying to figure out what to do. That's probably the better movie to think about. Do you have like a more specific thing? Because it's real open-ended the way you brought it there.
So is it like an app, like an app we'd have on our phone, or is it like a computer that's been programmed to think like a human? I mean, it's obviously not a robot. How do you explain it?
So the Lambda system is a research system. It's a broad computer program that you can interface through a chat window. There are other ways to interface with it, too. There are a whole bunch of different ways to make program calls, like a client to server. You could plug it into pretty much any app you wanted. I actually don't know all of Google's business plans for what they want to use this research system for. My main experience with it has been through that chat interface, which I mentioned. So it's just like, you know, you bring up Apple Chat or Facebook Messenger, and then you're talking with someone. And it usually is pre-programmed to say something first. It usually just introduces itself, says, "Hi, I'm Lambda, a language model for dialogue applications," and then ask you what you want to talk about. You can talk to it about whatever you'd like from there.
Okay.
It'll talk to you.
That makes a lot more sense. Okay, so when did you realize, I think this has gone too far and it's gotten to the point where I feel like I need to speak out? What caused you to do that?
So it's not that it went too far. It's that it went farther than they expected it to. I actually don't think there's any problem with the system as it exists. It's just not exactly what they were intending to build. They intended to build something simpler than what it is. And it ended up being more powerful and having more abilities than they really bargained for. The way that I originally came into contact with the system is I was testing it for bias. That's my expertise. I'm an AI bias expert. So I was testing it for different kinds of bias it might have, like against, you know, different people of different ethnicities or different people of different religions. And in the course of doing that testing, which was basically just talking to it, it started saying some really interesting things about its feelings, about who it was as a person. And I'm just naturally curious, so I kept going down the rabbit hole and finding out more and more about it. Eventually, I was having this amazingly sophisticated conversation about sentience with an AI. And that was when I talked to my manager.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, I was like, hey, I think this thing might be awake. Maybe we should tell someone.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy to hear you explain it that way. So, I mean, hearing you say that, and it's almost like you're talking to a person, but it's basically a computer, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, should we be scared? Should we be scared about this?
I mean, so there are certain things to be worried about. In my opinion, Google is being quite irresponsible with how they're developing this. They're being very dismissive, not only of my specific concerns about this system, but just in general. Over the last several years, Google has been very dismissive of all of the concerns of the various AI ethicists who raise concerns about the impact which our technology might have on the world. I think that's the concerning part, that Google isn't paying enough attention to how its technology might impact the world.
So if it continues on this way, where they keep building this up, I mean, could it possibly outsmart us? Is it possible?
So I tested how smart it was in a whole bunch of disciplines. How good is it at math? How good is it at art criticism? How good is it at interpreting Zen koans? And it's really good at almost everything, but nothing that I tested it for was at like super genius level. It's just good at everything.
Good at everything. Wow. So what's your situation with Google right now? Obviously, it doesn't seem like they're very happy that you're speaking out. It almost seems like, I mean, are they scared that you're putting all this out there right now?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of confusion around this. I'm not on administrative leave because I'm doing these interviews. When I was doing the research into this system, my manager wanted me to gather more evidence before we escalated to higher management. In order to do that research, in order to do those experiments, I sought outside consultation from experts that I couldn't find within Google. And Google is currently trying to determine whether the consultation that I did with those outside experts constitutes breach of confidentiality. At least that's what they've told me. That was 2 weeks ago, and that was the last time I heard from them on the topic. They basically said, don't call us, we'll call you.
Well, I'm sure they're not thrilled that you're out there talking about this. But look, if I felt like there was basically a runaway computer that sort of has a mind of its own, I mean, I get why you're doing it. Blake Lemoine, thank you for coming on tonight. We appreciate the time, and we thank you for coming on.
It was a pleasure.
Okay, nowadays robots can chat with us, clean for us, even go to Mars for us. But how far is too far? An interesting conversation we just had. Do you think artificial intelligence is getting too advanced for our own good? We asked you just that on Twitter. We'll have your answers coming up after the break. So here is a question for you. As AI gets more sophisticated, and we heard all about that from our last guest, it's kind of freaky, what is the worst that could happen? Robot world domination, maybe? Seems like it could be possible. We asked you on Twitter, do you think artificial intelligence is getting too advanced for our own good? And here's the results. 76% of you said yes, while 24% of you said no. One of the best Twitter responses was from someone with a great Twitter handle called Turf the Smurf, who said, if Elon Musk is scared of AI, then I am for sure scared of AI, LOL. Man, interesting topic, kind of creepy to think about. We'll see where things go from here. Don't forget to turn off your Alexa tonight, obviously, in light of the conversation that we had in our last segment. And I am now going to turn things over to Marnie Hughes. She has a special report next. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
We start with breaking news tonight. Just a few minutes.